Right now, the holidays are almost here. You've got shopping on the brain, but gas prices are sky high and the markets have been all over the place lately. What better time for our monthly visit with the Motley Fool? Money is on many people's minds this time of year, so if you have questions about the recent market swings and what it means for your portfolio, about tech stocks, retail, or the condition of the markets in general, give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. David Gardner is co-founder of The Motley Fool and is in a studio at Fool headquarters in Alexandria, Virginia. And David, nice to talk to you.
Hello, Anthony.
And let me muster my stern voice for the usual caveat. Neither David nor I will offer any advice on whether to buy or sell a particular stock. But if you do have questions about the way things work or the way they ought to work, about trends, about philosophies of investment, you can give us a call. Again, 800-989-8255. And David, let's start with last week. The Dow dropped more than 600 points in just a couple of days, even knocking down some of those tech stocks that were on a big run this year. Things are on the rebound a bit now, but what's behind all these ups and downs?
Well, I think it's probably just the lack of confidence in our banking system more than anything. There are always 1,000 factors that are valuing stocks, and a lot of them are ones that I have absolutely – that would be opaque to me and to most people. Probably 500 things I don't know that are happening that are controlling the prices. But I think mainly the great volatility we're seeing, and we're also seeing some big up days too, come from constantly trying to figure if this whole – mortgage banking system that we all rely on is healthy or not. And there are different data coming in every day now that look one direction or the other, and it confuses the market.
Well, as we mentioned, even those tech stocks took a big hit last week. For most of the year, tech has been unbeatable. But if someone is heavily invested in technology, should they be rethinking their portfolio? What's your advice?
Well, I really don't think so, Anthony. In fact, actually, I'm enough of an iconoclast and sort of a rule breaker unto myself that I don't even really like the phrase tech stocks. And just because I think that everything has to do with technology in our world today. I mean, it's almost hard. Even Walmart relies on, to such a great degree, on information technology to execute its gigantic business every single day. So I'm the person who almost thinks Walmart is a tech stock, especially you start throwing in Walmart.com. A lot of people said, you know, well, Amazon.com is a tech stock. Well, is it or is it a retail stock? And in the end, these things are all sort of labels. I think the central story of our time is an incredible expansion of technological capability. It's been happening for the last 30 years, the last 15 in earnest. I expect it to continue, and that's why, in general, I try to make sure my money is relevantly invested. Often, I'm looking at companies that are using technology to bypass older companies that used to do those same businesses. A simple example today for me is Blue Nile, which is improving the process of young men purchasing engagement rings simply by making it cheaper over the internet. That's just one example, but there are dozens, of course, of better business models being practiced on the internet than were practiced off of it. So I think we should keep our money in those things.
So if technology is this broad, broad category, are there some areas within that broad category that we can sort of pick out that are doing particularly well, better than others?
Yes, there's a wide range of them. I'll give three very quick examples to show what a rich world we live in today. One is a company called Intuitive Surgical that is improving the process of having surgery done on prostate cancer and on hysterectomies today. Minimally invasive surgery using sort of robotics of physicians not placing their hands inside you, but rather their hands inside a machine that is located right next to you that operates on you, and they're making micro fine movements you couldn't make with your hands because as they manipulate the machine, the actual robot is doing the work on you, of course, with the robotic eye, minimally invasive and making very fine movements. You walk out of the hospital 2 days faster, 2 days quicker than if you had surgery done the old way. That's one example. Another simple one is solar power. I really believe solar power is a great long-term growth story. There are companies in China, a company called SunTech Power, for example. There are companies, First Solar. A lot of these look like expensive stocks. Many of them have tripled over the last 2 years. But I think it's not just hype. I think it's for really good reasons. Every time we hear about the oil price going up to $100 a share, a barrel, guess what? That actually means that solar becomes more and more affordable because it's still quite expensive itself. But if oil prices itself out of the market, you've got great growth there. And then finally, I just think almost anything on the internet. Obviously, we see Google and what a tremendous stock it has been. Anything that has a lot of people using it on the internet, that's where you want to start your research, not on little dodgy little operations. the so-called dot-coms here and there. But just think of the medical technology, the energy technology, and then the consumer-oriented technology that we're all using every day. Mm.
You mentioned Google, but when a stock gets up to $600 or $700 per share, is it just too costly to buy? I mean, for some people, it might just be too costly to buy. But what about the wisdom overall of buying at that high?
Well, I love to talk about percentages, not points, or in this case, we could talk about, you know, the real cost of something. I mean, if you have $5,000, it doesn't matter to me whether you buy 5 shares of a $1,000 stock or 1,000 shares of a $5 stock. But in that example, many people only ever consider the latter. The idea that they would buy 5 shares of a $1,000 stock sounds like you would either never make money or it's so expensive to buy. Warren Buffett had great advice to all of us. He said, pretend every company on the market trades today at $100 per share. In other words, completely take the whole idea of the price per share of the stock out of your mind. What company do you want to own for the long term? Hmm. And what's funny, part of the dynamic of why a stock like Google does so well is enough people are scared off by a $350 per share price. They don't even invest in it. Then finally they realize they missed it and they start buying when it's $600, $700, $800 a share. So high share prices actually, interestingly, keep a fair number of people out for a while until that company grows into its mature phase and everybody realizes, gosh, I should have owned Amazon or eBay all along.
Hmm. David, here's an email from Lee in Oakland. I'm a graduate student with a few $1,000s of disposable income and would like to invest in both my retirement as well as some more risky investments. What should those risky investments be?
Well, first of all, I'm so glad to hear anybody who's a graduate student having a few $1,000s to invest. Many of us start out substantially in the hole with consumer and student debt. But for anybody who is just starting out investing, I think the very first investment you can make and probably should make is just an index fund where you're buying the market itself. You can buy an S&P 500 index fund for a very low annual fee, and you're basically getting the American stock market right there. And that's your benchmark. Any effort you make toward investing should be to beat that, but at least you've gotten in the game. And the good news is the index fund has traditionally gone up about 10% a year if you do the numbers. Doubles every 7 years. So, you know, that few $1,000s is double that 7 years from now. That might not sound like much, but once you go 7, 14, 28, this is a graduate student we're talking about, all of a sudden when you double that fifth or sixth time, you're talking about a substantial amount of money. So even with just a few $1,000s today, realize the long-term implications of passively investing that well. And to finish that answer, Anthony, I would just say if you want to go beyond the index fund, which we celebrate at the Motley Fool, we're all about buying individual stocks. I really love Peter Lynch's advice. I've used it throughout my own life. Buy what you know. Mm-hmm. And so wherever you're shopping, whatever you're clicking around on the internet, that's where most of my best investments have been. I'm not just paying lip service to Peter Lynch. I'm describing my own experience over 25 years of personally investing, where most of the best money I made was when I bought America Online in the 1990s as an early AOL user. And if you're an early adopter type, you should really be thinking about what you're adopting.
Hmm, interesting. We're talking to David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool, about money, the economy, and investments, and we're taking your calls. Let's go to Jim, who's calling from Florida. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question. I've been in the service for many years, and about 12 or 15 years ago, I started investing in a mutual fund. And then I got my wife one in one to kind of supplement my retirement when it comes around from the military and from Social Security. And I've been using an IRA through a mutual fund. And I put my wife in technologies and I put mine in the more traditional stocks, the Pepsi Cola and whatever all is in the just kind of a safe fund. Is that a pretty good strategy?
How
do you think,
done?
David?
I'd love to know how you've done over the last 15 years.
Well, and I'm not one of those guys that, you know, looks at the paper every day to see what it does. In fact, truth is, I look at a statement when I get it every year, and like there's something, the Lipper fund or average, something, my 10-year average, I think, is about 12.2 or 12.4%.
That's pretty good.
Okay.
My goal was always to be at 10% is what I was kind of, the counseling I'd gotten years ago is if I could maintain a 10% average over the life of it, that I do pretty well. I think my worst year was a minus 8 in the fund, and maybe my best year was in the low 20s. So it's averaged out to somewhere right around 12%.
Well, for a lot of us, first of all, that's really good. And I think the greatest challenge for most people listening to Talk of the Nation today is to save more. to continue adding to what you've saved. It's almost not so much did you buy the hot stock this year or will you be in the right fund next year? Really, the secret to all this is, are you saving? Can you manage to put away 5 to 10% or even more at the executive level, maybe, of your salary? You and your wife, every single year, adding it and keeping it rather passively invested. There's this guy named Jim Cramer who jumps around a lot on CNBC, and he has a popular investment show. But from my standpoint, if people are really following him, they're jumping in and out of the market way too much. And we really believe at The Motley Fool that it's just critical to find those 12 and 15-year investments and keep adding to them. So based on the return you just quoted, you're doing well. I would encourage you in conclusion here to make sure you do know how the market average has performed each year. They may be using the Lipper. You can use the S&P 500. You got to know your benchmark in order to know whether you're beating it or not. So sometimes we can think we're doing well because we were up 7% each of the last 5 years. But you know what? If the market average was up 10%, we're not doing as well as we should have done. So I think for a lot of us, have a benchmark.
Thanks for the call, Jim. We're talking to David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool, and we're taking your questions about investment strategy. You can give us a call at 800-989-8255. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call from Aaron, who's calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Aaron. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is about effectively the personal spaceflight industry. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, Virgin Galactic and those guys. And I know there's not a lot out there to invest in right now, but what's your take on the emerging personal spaceflight industry? Do you see it as a potential growth industry, as an industry that's going to go nowhere? Just what's your general opinion of it?
I'm very interested in it, and like a lot of things, since I'm a generalist and an expert on nothing, I sort of follow it avidly and root for it. There is not a lot of stock market play there, and you and I can generally figure out which trends will count for the long term. I think that is one of them. The hard time is knowing what is the right time to actually get invested, because you could have been investing in fuel cell companies 8 or 9 years ago and lost a fair amount of money over a five-year period, even if fuel cells do end up being a relevant replacement technology for oil, which is, the jury's still out on that. So with this industry, I prefer to focus more on slightly larger companies that are already doing the space thing. So if you look at a company like Orbital Sciences, which is a company I've recommended in the past, that's a company that does a lot of satellite. They put a lot of the satellites out around the Earth. And I think it's those sorts of companies that end up participating as players in these industries. I also do admire Richard Branson of Virgin, I like his chutzpah, so I would keep an eye on Virgin Galactic, and I do think it is really fun to study as well, and maybe that's my concluding point on this one, is tend to invest or at least focus your business attention where you'll be passionate and where you'll enjoy following the story. I always hate it when somebody comes up to me at a cocktail party and says, you know, what do you think of this mortgage banking stock? And I'll say, well, what do you know about it? And they'll say, I don't know anything about it. Somebody put me into it. And I think there's a real opportunity cost being paid there. That person may or may not do well in the investment, but they're really not going to learn much from it. And we're going to learn a lot more when we find something like space flight, get interested in it, start researching the industry. So I at least am following one company in that emerging industry.
Thanks, Aaron. David, we mentioned retail earlier, and Walmart saw an upswing this week. But I guess a lot of stores are wondering if it's going to be a good holiday season for them. So, you know, if shoppers will be buying online this year, is this a good time to be in retail stocks?
Retail stocks, Anthony, have done very poorly. You may well be aware of that. It's been disappointing. Sometimes it's not so much that the market's reacting to what's already happened. It's that the market looks ahead. I think it's a truism of the stock market that it knows what's going to be happening 6 months from now already today. And a lot of times people get confused when they see their stock come out with a great earnings report and immediately the stock sells off. That's one of the most confusing moments for new investors. And that's because they think they should be rewarded for the great quarter that was just reported. But the stock market really only cares about next quarter or next year, or at least it primarily cares about the future. And prices trade off of that. So I think what you're seeing is you're seeing that we're going to have not so great Christmas this year. The holiday sales will be weak, and I think most of the stocks in this industry are showing us that ahead of time. I will say that, you know, Target, Walmart, these companies, Costco, have been stronger than the specialty retailers. So, you know, when you do provide more product at a discount, that probably favors this kind of a consumer environment. So those are a little bit more stable stocks. But to tell you the truth, I'm not really that interested in Walmart. It's a multi-hundred-billion-dollar market cap. For that stock to double, it takes a lot. I mean, you know, these days, and if you look back over the last 5 years, Walmart has just been a stock not that you did not want to be in. You should have been in other stocks. Once companies get massive, at least for me personally as more of a smaller cap investor, I lose interest in them. I would prefer to look at a company like, let's say, PetSmart, which I think also has a great long-term future, but is only worth $3 billion, you know, not the proverbial $300 billion, which is easier to double over time would be my rhetorical question.
David, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I want to read this email because it interested us. Unfortunately, we didn't get the name of the listener, but here's the question. My husband and I have always wanted to invest in real estate, and I figured now was a good time to take advantage of the lower interest rates and cheaper costs for homes. My husband is wary of the risks. What do you think?
Well, I think that you, if I hear that my husband is weary of the risks, I would probably think about the personal dynamic of your money more so than whether that asset class is the right one or not this month. I really do try to invest together with my family. And so that would be my initial reaction to that. But finally, I would just say that real estate is obviously never going away and a very good long-term investment. It is very much in question right now, just like retail stocks. So I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 3 to 6 months you get a pretty good opportunity to get some good longer-term pricing right now by buying. But you're being brave right now if you step in and do it.
All right, David. Well, David, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Fool on.
All right. That's David Gardner, co-founder of The Motley Fool. There's a link to his site on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ira Flatow is here tomorrow with Science Friday. Neil Conan is back on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Anthony Brooks in Washington.